Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And I'm Jeff Jackson.
Jeff, good to have you on the line again.
It's good to be on the line. Yes, it is. Lots going on. Good stuff going on.
Well, our previous part of this podcast, the support raising, got double the hits, it looks like, than anything else. It seems to be a semi-hot topic. What do you think about that?
I think it's always a relevant subject. You know, I think what we titled the podcast, you know, revisiting support raising again. I don't think it's a subject you can ever beat as a dead horse. It's always relevant. And there's always people that, even if they've never tried to raise support before, and this is the first time, or they already have, they're looking for some encouragement or refreshment on how to do it. So it's always relevant to me. And I don't think you can talk about it enough, actually.
You know, it's like one of those things, like no matter what your skill is, you always got to revisit the basics to, you know, stay in tune, you know?
Absolutely. It's kind of like, you know, I'm a big baseball guy, and you know, I go to spring training in Phoenix as often as I can, you know, in March. And here you've got these professional baseball players, and first, you know, week of spring training, what do? They do the same basic stuff little leaguers are doing.
Yeah, they're shagging balls, playing catch.
Yeah.
You know, sliding into third base.
Right. Yeah. Practicing their, you know, how they handle ground balls, the transition from their glove to their hand. I mean, all this fundamental stuff, even professionals have to go back to the fundamentals to stay at the top of their game. And I think it's the same way with support raising.
And the key to baseball is not, and I think it relates to support raising, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I'm not one for the sports analogies all the time. But, you know, when it comes to raising money in both the profit and the nonprofit world, everybody's looking like, how can I, you know, knock it out of the park? Well, you don't see them practicing knocking it out of the park in baseball. You see them get on base, get on base, get on base, get on base. And that's the thing that, you know, we need to really communicate with those trying to raise support is get on base, get on base, get on base.
Yeah.
And the more you get on base, the better your batting average will be.
Yeah. And that getting on base, you know, is really, if, you know, running that baseball analogy a little further, is kind of like, again, understanding what's the goal of a baseball game, you know, what's your objective in the baseball game. And, you know, for the missionary, it's to build partnership. It's not to get money from people. It's to, hey, give people the opportunity to participate in what God's called you to do for his glory among the nations. And, you know, the right terminology and the numbers of people that you can connect with to kind of share the vision that God's given you and what it's going to take to accomplish it and invite them to be partners. It's one meeting with one person, one phone call with one person can make all the difference in actually being able to get out there and do what God's called you to do.
Jeff, there's a couple of situations I want to talk through with you as a former mission pastor. The first one is probably the one that is closest to my heart, and that has to do with when missionaries come off the field. I had a friend that was on the mission field for a decade, and it was like the world had passed him by, and him and his whole family by, and, you know, they really didn't have a plan in place. And this guy was actually a pretty good budgeter. He actually owned a house that he had rented out while he was gone. So he actually had a house and things to come back to, which I know a lot of missionaries don't have anything like that. But in his regular profession, things had changed and just felt really lost. And what's the thinking about funding missionaries after they come back from the field?
Well, you know, the thinking is, and so much of this, you know, Brian, like in so many other realms of missions, is education. I mean, people don't, your average person in the average church living, you know, the regular life here in America, they don't think about all that goes into, you know, relocating your family to another country, depending on other people to make it possible for you to live there. The reality that at some point you're going to need a break to come back and not go off the deep end culturally, reconnect with people that have been partners with you, add new partners. And then like what you're bringing up, the idea that, you know, at some point most missionaries are going to relocate back to America. So what I've seen over the years, and thank God for my pastor, Pat Kenny, and the leadership of my church, they understood from the beginning that at some point we were going to transition back. Because believe it or not, and it's just crazy, but I can't tell you how many times I've heard this. As I've talked with pastors about missionaries and their members that go overseas, there's, on the one hand, there's sort of an understanding that this is radical. There is a difference between this member of your church moving to Dallas, Texas, or that member maybe moving to Mumbai, India. There's quite a few differences that, yeah, they're both going to be away from your church and not part of its day-to-day life anymore, but those are two radically different things. What happens is a lot of pastors will know that up front, that, yeah, clearly there's a distinction between Dallas and Mumbai. And for this missionary to live in Mumbai, he needs a number of people to give financially. But what happens is when that person's done over there, a lot of times the pastor just categorizes it into the same realm as, hey, the guy moved back from Dallas, and what he needed to move back here from Dallas is really no different than what the guy moving back from Mumbai does. And so it gets into that realm of educating pastors to think about the kind of issues you just brought up. Somebody's been gone 10 years, whatever their skill set was before they left, if they were in the working world, you know, that industry has changed. They've changed, obviously, their pace of life, the way they view life, everything has changed. And so the idea that they're just going to make the move back and there doesn't need to be some extra financial support to help sort of bridge that transition it's crucial that people understand there doesn't need to be that cushion, that bridge, that transitional cushion for them to land on when they come back for at least a good 3 to 6 months.
So budgeting for that on the front end, when you're building your budget, you talked about the education component.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, very specifically in missions training with you, that being discussed with me and my family. And I thought that was helpful. And that was something that we thought of as we budgeted. And that was something that we communicated as we came back and took on the role of missions pastor, sending out other missionaries. You need to work this into your budget for when you come back. And that's a tough discipline.
It is. And you know what I have found is that because there's two separate issues. One is like a furlough fund too, which, you know, for the people that are listening, I think most of you understand the idea that most missionaries are going to need to come back for a visit to the States to decompress, to reconnect with their donors, to just get a break from the field and get out from under the culture stress they live in as missionaries day in, day out overseas. And so kind of what I've seen be the most effective is prior to the missionary going to the field, if the leadership of his church understands, number one, that at some point in the future, they are going to make a transition back to life in the United States. So you want to plant that seed. You can't really go into the detail of creating that fund right now because a lot of times these missionaries don't know how long they're going to be out there. They plan on being out there minimum 5 years or 7 years or 10 years, but things change. What is tangible and what is measurable is to sort of plant the seed for a return fund from the field, but plant the furlough fund even more strongly, more deeply, to where the home church leader knows from the beginning, as your missionary is building his budget, we are suggesting that they put together a furlough fund, that $50 or $100 every month that they raise is going to go into this fund for them to be able to take a break while they're on the field without having to hit their sponsors or their donors up, you know, afresh, that would be into their monthly budget. And I think if the furlough fund is focused on, it's easier for people to sort of swallow and get the idea behind that. And I want to talk about the mentality, sort of the psychology of that in just a second, but of the missionary that would try to do that. But then the idea that, hey, they've been out there 3 or 4 years, that conversation was had before they went about they're going to need return funds. And so most missionaries know a good year out before they're going to come back, that they are going to come back. So then you can revisit the idea of, hey, we need funding for the transition to come back to the States.
Okay.
So, and what we do at Shepherd Staff, and I, you know, this, and I think most organizations do this, is that we recommend that missionaries ask their donors to continue to support them for 3 months minimum after their return, so that they've got a minimum of 12 weeks of being able to come back, you know, readjust time zones, readjust to life here, get a little break from the exhaustion of what it takes to reenter life in America. But we, you know, we strongly suggest that missionaries tell their donors, ask them to support them 3 months after their return. And literally 90% of them will do that without hesitation.
I worked at one church for a while where the missions policy, this was a church that had a written missions policy, was to support the returning missionary for 1 month for every year they were in the field.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
And so if a missionary was in the field for 9 years, they got 9 months.
Right.
From the church, you know, whatever portion of the support that the church paid, they just continued the budget for that. I always thought that was a very caring policy.
It is. I like that idea a lot. Yeah. And, you know, what I wanted to get to as far as the psychology of it is, you know, and this is always a factor in all of this realm of support raising. And it's particularly an issue we as Americans deal with, again, as a byproduct of our individualistic, hyper-independent culture. When missionaries wrap their mind around the fact that they're stepping into this place of dependency on other brothers and sisters for their financial means to do what God's called them to do overseas, that's a huge hill to climb. But once they've climbed it, then what happens is they get on the field, they're now supported. And a lot of times what happens is that old independent sort of more bang for the buck mentality that comes with American culture creeps in, and now they don't want to take a break. They don't want to take their family for a nice meal, because, you know, what would my supporters think if I went out and took my family to a meal that cost me $50, when there's how many families giving me $20 a month, and they have to scrape by to send that $20. Well, so what happens is, if you don't deal with the furlough fund up front and these kind of issues before they leave, and now the person's already out there on the field, it's like they have to reclimb the mountain to get people to give funds for them to come back on a break to the States or to make the transition back to life in America. It's like they have to reclimb that mountain, and it's just not healthy, you know, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically. So if you can think ahead to make sure, hey, build your budget enough where you've got some entertainment funds there for your family, build your budget with a furlough component, so you don't have to go back to people that are already supporting you and asking them to give over and above what they already give, or try to get in new donors just to fund this one break that you're trying to take or whatever. If you can think about it up front, plan for it, it'll save you psychological challenging and grief downstream.
Yeah, I mean, it really makes sense, you know, even from a communication standpoint, for a missionary to plan everything as much as they possibly can. Now, you can't know every contingency.
That's right.
But there are things that you can plan on, and you need to build into it so that your communication is always, well, here's the awesome things that God is doing with your money, rather than having to go back to him with your hat in your hand,
right,
asking for more.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah, that has got to be, that's just, you know, I've been in that place. You've probably been in that place, and it's tough because it's humbling, and humbling's good, but sometimes it's just a little too humiliating.
Yeah, that's right. Humbling can be humiliating. That's a good one. That's like a blog post right there.
Yeah.
Humbled is crosses over into humiliation.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I failed to plan for this. Forgive me.
Yeah.
But I got to ask you to beef it up, or I got to put a few more givers in, you know, onto the roster. And so all of those things are a little deflating,
mm-hmm.
You know, and there's enough deflating things that happen on the mission field just because you're out there in a spiritual battle.
Absolutely. You know, again, a lot of it is coaching upstream, and not just coaching the missionary, but, you know, in the paradigm that we work within, coaching the home church key leaders. to understand, absolutely, you know, what should go into your missionary's budget while leaving them in the, as the decision makers. But hey, here are things you need to consider. And, you know, the idea, the term that I've heard, especially with, like I've been on a couple of boards for relief and development organizations, is like donor fatigue, you know, where you keep tapping into your faithful donors every time there's a crisis, and you can actually fatigue them to where they're not going to, they're either, they may just give up giving at all, or they're not going to give anymore because you're constantly got the new crisis for them to give towards.
Well, you know, they'll stop reading your emails.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, that's just the easiest thing to do, or are not taking your phone calls. All those things are very, very easy to do these days. And you want to be the guy whose phone calls are taken and emails are read.
And I think, as far as the missionary himself, if he understands, you know, what goes into building his budget, both his startup budget and his, you know, monthly ongoing budget, and when he sits down with a potential partner and he explains to them, look, the mission field is, you know, it's different than life here in America. And so there's a need to actually build in, you know, like you know, if he gives them this kind of detail, you'll see $100 a month for entertainment in my budget. But the reason we build that into our budget up front is because we don't have the ability when you're on the ground over there, you don't have as much flexibility in how you spend your money. Costs can change quickly, you know, on the field. Exchange rates change. And you're in the midst of people with a lot of need. And so a lot of times what'll end up happening is you'll end up spending your budget to meet somebody else's need. And now you don't have the ability to get the things that are part of being refreshed on the field, such as, you know, hey, we've got $100 a month to eat out on. It's in our budget. We're keeping it for that. We're not going to give out of that because that's what's going to keep us healthy and stuff on the field. So there's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah. You said a couple of things that make me want to quiz you a bit and maybe take this in a different direction. You talked about sharing with, you know, a potential donor, your budget. And then you also talked about the things that go into your budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to kind of quiz you, just kind of shoot from the hip.
Yeah.
I wish I had like an actual budget worksheet in front of me, but I don't. So anything that's coming is just kind of very impromptu.
Okay.
So first question is about transparency. Are you like super transparent with your budget with absolutely everybody? How does that work?
No, I think you have to be ready and willing to be as transparent as the person wants that you're sharing with. But I think, you know, just discretion and discernment will tell you most people, if they really know you and they love you, again, they're giving money not for the project you're going to do over there. They're giving money because they trust you. So the majority of the people, if you tell them, look, I need to raise $1,500 a month, my rent's going to be about $800 a month, and then there's all the other things, most people are going to go, oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I trust you. Never mind. I want to give you this much money. I don't need to know anymore. But I think you need to be ready for those that want a little more detail, and maybe those that aren't as trusting, and certainly those that don't understand the dynamics of living on the mission field. I think you have to be ready to be as transparent as is necessary to give them peace and comfort.
On that transparency note and accountability note, I know that as a policy with Shepherd staff, not only does the missionary get a report of where they are with their budget and their giving, their sending church gets a report as well.
Right.
So that conversation can be had at the pastoral level, which I think is extremely healthy, quite frankly. And then it also is something that the missionary can point people to. My pastor is totally in the loop with my budget, you know, that kind of a conversation.
Yeah. And we don't, you know, at Shepherd Staff, we don't tell the home church, you know, who the donors are, but what the home church key person gets is they get, hey, your budget's $2,500 a month. So your home church key person gets a report saying your budget's $2,500 a month. You brought in $2,800 last month. We don't give them detail unless they ask for it and the missionary approves, but we give them, there's a ballpark understanding every month whether their missionary is meeting the budget that they went out with or not. And that's helpful.
Yeah, and again, it's tools for having a conversation and
yes.
accountability.
Yes.
And so some of those things, those are conversations to, you know, how much further you drill in,
mm-hmm.
you know, that those are conversations to have at the home church, and that's why Shepherd Staff is structured the way it's structured. So that's awesome. So what goes into the budget? Let me just throw some things out
okay.
there. One of them you said furlough.
Yes.
Talked about entertainment.
Yeah, furlough, entertainment, your normal cost of living stuff, you know, rent, utilities, transportation. And transportation is a big one, because are they going to buy a vehicle? That brings up a whole another set of questions that need to be answered. Are they going to buy a vehicle, or are they just going to take public transportation? A lot of people that have kids, you know, what are the costs of their homeschooling, or if they paid it for their kids to go to school? There's visa issues having to do with staying in the country legally, you know, and then there's the issues like a furlough fund. Do they have, are they in a retirement fund, like a 403B, which we have, we offer that to people so they can put away, it's basically the nonprofit version of a 401K. So we offer,
right.
you know, a 403B. Are they going to use our group health insurance policy? That's got to be built into their budget. If they don't, if they choose not to use our group health policy, they need to have a portion of their budget for medical care to spend locally. So yeah, there's, I mean, basically the nuts. And then there's, you know, there's the issues of entertainment. The same kind of things that we don't think about here.
What about things like college fund for your kids?
That's a good question. Most missionaries are not doing that. Most missionaries that I know are not budgeting for that. They would, whatever their salary is, they would use that a portion of the salary that they come up with, but I don't think it's like a listed budget item for them. No missionaries that I know of have raised specific support for a college fund for their kids.
Okay. So what about a missionary that is super educated, you know, maybe in their skills are needed on the field, but the reason they're so educated is because, you know, they have a master's or a doctorate, PhD, and with that goes some college debt.
Now, that's a great, I'm glad you brought that up, because we have a policy on that. So our policy on that is basically if the missionary going out has a student loan, that's not a hindrance to us, but we require them to inform their donors that a portion of their funds will be going to pay off their student loans. And when we talk to the missionary about that and their home church key person, we let them know, look, what you've got to emphasize to your potential partners, your financial partners, is that, you know, the degree that you have is what's made you capable of doing what God's called you to do out there. So,
uh-huh.
so in a sense, paying off student loans is a piece of what's going to make you effective on the field. So what you don't want to do, because I've seen this a few times, not a lot, if missionaries don't tell their donors up front that a portion of their donations is going to go to pay off their student loans, when people find out about that, they feel like they've been deceived. They feel like
right.
they've something, a fast one's been pulled over on them. So if you tell them that right up front, so that everybody knows, and again, and of all the missionaries that I know, the ones that have student loans and they've told people this, it's not even an issue. They're like, it's okay. I get it. You got to pay back $100, $150 a month of your total budget for your student loans. But the degree you got from those student loans is what's making you effective out there. I get it.
That's good to know, because I've been in some conversations around a table where there's multiple contributors, you know, to policy making.
Mm-hmm.
And some are like, they're so hard line about any kind of debt. But a lot of times the ones that are most hard line, you know, they maybe didn't go to school, or,
right.
you know, school was handled for them.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they didn't have to carry that burden themselves. That's one of the things that I've seen on an anecdotal level. And so that's why I bring that up. What about other debt?
We have a policy like no credit card debt. That we don't send anybody that's got any credit card debt, if they have a home or, you know, leaving a car behind and they're going to pay for a car while they're gone, you know, that's not an option for us. And then obviously if they have a home, that's a different story because that's a mortgage. They're usually going to rent it out or they have a property manager or whatever. We're, you know, we work with those kind of people. But the two kinds of debt that we as a ministry will accept is a mortgage payment and a student loan debt. That's it.
Those are great answers. And I, you know, that I genuinely wondered about, although I had a feeling about the mortgage side of it. And then, you know, that's just kind of you're hoping that's a wash.
Yeah, it should be a wash.
Even better if it's, you know, you have positive cash flow that you can A, put back into the home, or B, maybe even underwrite your ministry a little bit with.
Yeah, exactly. And again, these are questions that people don't think about. You know, one of the interesting things, and there's two organizations. I can't think of the name. Maybe you can look them up later. But like with there's one in particular for medical people that have, you know, doctors, PAs, nurses that come out of college with a lot of debt, and they want to be missionaries, but they've got this debt. So there's one organization that actually pays college student loans while a medical person is on the mission field. There's hoops they have to jump through, and there's all kinds of stuff involved with it. But basically, if you're in a medical profession that's needed on the field, this organization will actually pay your student loans as long as you're on the field.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's another one called it's not GoFundMe, but it's like the GoFund, and it's only a couple years old. It's actually just about an hour up the road from where I live, where they've taken the same concept, but said, hey, there are even business degrees and other degrees where you've racked up student debt and you could be out on the field except for paying off this debt. And so they kind of help pay off student loans for people that are in certain categories doing missions work other than medical out on the field. So I think that's creative use of God's resources, you know, for the kingdom. I love that idea.
That's brilliant. One thing that keeps talent off the field is finances.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we need top talent in the mission field.
Right. Yeah. And it's just the reality of the context we're in today, where that top talent, you know, and a lot of those degrees are required to get visas into certain countries, but you know, it takes a lot of money to get those degrees, and there's always student loans that need to be paid off. So you got these people that want to go to the field, they're qualified, they're top drawer people, but they've got to work jobs here in the States to pay off their student debt. Well, these organizations say, no, we want to get you to the field. We'll help pay off your student debt while you're gone.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Well, do you have any concluding thoughts?
Yeah, concluding thoughts again. Let me just kind of conclude with, you know, stepping into the world of support raising is really like stepping into a parallel universe. And the more you know how that universe operates before you step into it, the less stress it's going to be on you, and the better able you're going to be to frame it, what that parallel universe is like for the people that know you and love you, your potential partners. So the better you understand it, and you can be honest about how difficult it is to step into that position of dependency and then pass on your struggle in stepping into that, I think that's what connects with people. And even those issues that we've talked about on this specific podcast on furlough and coming back, when a parallel universe is explained properly by somebody that's about to do it or somebody that's in the midst of living in it, I think most people will not balk at recognizing that partnership, financial partnership, is multifaceted, and the benefits are multifaceted for the good of the missionary and the glory of God among the nations.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.